विक्षोध्यावयसं तं च प्रकृतीनां च सम्मतम् अनुराक्त प्रजां राजा ध्रुवं चक्रे भुवापतिम्। When, after concentration, King Uttanapada saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom and that his ministers were agreeable and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva Maharaj as the emperor of this planet. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Although it is misconceived that formerly the monarchical government was autocratic, from the description of this verse it appears that not only was King Uttanapada a Rajarshi, but before installing his beloved son Dhruva on the throne of the empire of the world, he consulted his ministerial officers, considered the opinion of the public, and also personally examined Dhruva's character. Then the king installed him on the throne to take charge of the affairs of the world. When a Vaishnav king like Dhruva Maharaj is the head of the government of the entire world, the world is so happy that it is not possible to imagine or describe. Even now, if people would all become Krishna conscious, the democratic government of the present day would be exactly like the kingdom of heaven. If all people became Krishna conscious, they would vote for persons of the category of Dhruva Maharaj. If the post of a chief executive were occupied by such a Vaishnava, all the problems of satanic government would be solved. The youthful generation of the present day, is very enthusiastic in trying to overthrow the government in different parts of the world. But unless people are Krishna conscious like Dhruva Maharaj, there will be no appreciable changes in government, because people who hanker to attain political position by hook or by crook cannot think of the welfare of the people. They are only busy to keep their own position of prestige and monetary gain. They have very little time to think of the welfare of the citizens. This morning we are reading from Canto 4, Chapter 9, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. Text number 66. King Uttanapada had a facility which has been unheard of in our modern history. He was the emperor of the entire earth. Not only was he emperor, but he had the complete confidence and allegiance of all of the citizens. And the reason is illustrated here by his own personal qualities. He was genuinely concerned for the welfare of others. He lived for the welfare of others. That is actually the position of a true leader in all various categories. political, spiritual, social, even within the family itself. Guru na sasyat, swajini na sasyat, pita na sasyat, jajani na sasyat. The Bhagavad describes one has no right to be a leader unless one will dedicate his or her life. Whether one is a king, a guru, a mother, a father, a teacher, from the cycle of birth and death. That means to actually live for the welfare of others. In the Vedic civilization, to the degree a person actually becomes selfless, servant, to that degree they are honored. Uttanapada was king. He was not an old man. But as soon as he saw that his child, Dhruva Maharaj, was old enough to take responsibilities, he immediately left everything. This is actually the test of whether he was actually performing his services for his own personal interests or whether he was really doing it for the interests of the citizens. He used the facilities of the kingdom as long as he could help others. But as soon as someone else was qualified to do the work, he gave it all to them and he entered into the forest. Can you imagine living in the palace of the king of the world? There is no such palace today, because no one could be king of the world today. He had all the kings of all the provinces throughout this planet giving him taxes, giving him allegiance. Therefore, his palace was actually the symbol of the representative of God ruling the earth. Incredible. But yet, he left it all. Not even to take any clothes with him. What to speak of jewelry, soldiers. He entered into the forest to live in caves, to live under trees, to just eat the fruits and the roots that grow in the ground and in the trees. Because his concern, even in renouncing the world, was for the welfare of others. Yad yad acharati sreshtas tat tat evetarochaya. So yat pramanam kurute lokas tadanubartate. What great people do, common men will follow. Human life is meant for self-realization. Therefore, the king had to show the citizens that actually, whatever I have done for you in the past was only in the service of God, to help you to become self-realized. And just to practice what he preached, at a young, not a very old age, he left everything for the sake of renunciation for the purpose of spiritual perfection. What an incredible example that is. Srila Prabhupada explains herein what a difference to the modern day politicians who somehow or other want to stay in power as long as they possibly can for the position of prestige and monetary gain. But Uttanapada had no concern for prestige or monetary gain. His only concern was service to God and service to his citizens. the humility of the king, although in such a high position where he has the ultimate authority to make decisions for the whole planet, he never made his decisions on his own. But he had his trusted ministers and the Brahmins, and he would consult them and receive their blessings. And not only that, but he was looking to see whether his citizens would be giving their blessings and were satisfied with his decisions. In other words, he was actually in the spirit of being a servant. If you're taking guidance and receiving blessings from others, then you're not in the mood of a master, you're in the mood of a servant. And of course, if the king of the planet is seeking guidance and blessings before making important decisions, what is the position of the rest of us? Srila Prabhupada explains so nicely here that even if this democratic government was based on Krishna conscious principles, then the world would be like Vaikuntha, the kingdom of heaven. Sometimes we find that Prabhupada, he condemned democracy as being demon crazy. Because if the general class of people in Kali Yuga are like Shudras, then they're going to vote for a bigger Sudra. Svavidvarahastrasurai karai, samsudha purushap. That when men are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, then they honor and worship people who are like bigger dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So what do you expect? People elect someone, put him in office, and then he involves himself in scandals and cheating, and then people blame him. But actually, they're the one who put him there. He's just a reflection of the citizens' mentality. Rather than just blaming the leaders, we should try to figure out what's wrong with us. That's democracy. But Prabhupada explains here, if the citizens become Krishna conscious, then they will vote for someone like Dhruva Maharaj. And when such a person is the ruler, then the whole kingdom becomes like the spiritual world. So this was Prabhupada's plan. From the grassroots level, trying to somehow or other encourage people to be Krishna conscious. And he also strived to preach to the leaders of society on all levels. Because Srila Prabhupada was actually genuinely concerned with the welfare of the people. This was his Guru Maharaj's first instruction to him. Srila Prabhupada, when he was a young man, like many people in India, he was advocating the movement of Sri Gandhi, and it was very reasonable and sensible that who will listen to India and its message as long as it is a subordinate country to another rule. So first let us get independence, then we can speak all this philosophy. He said, no, the only problem in this whole world is a lack of Krishna consciousness. And the only solution is Krishna consciousness. And we cannot wait. It's the only possibility of relieving the sufferings of humanity is Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you are intelligent, young man. Take this message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spread it throughout the world in the English language. And that was Prabhupada's life's mission. Because he had faith. He had faith in the absolute truth. And sometimes we try to create a situation where we find substitutes for Krishna consciousness, to solve our problems. To extend any method or ideology or any particular material facilities can implement and assist in pure Krishna consciousness, then it actually has real spiritual value. But the tendency is that we take shelter of these things. And in taking shelter of these things, our faith in Krishna is diminished. Therefore, our acharyas, they were very, very strict. Some people take shelter of psychology, psychiatry. Some take shelter of astrology, astronomy. These things can be used in a Krishna conscious spirit and can assist. However, the tendency is that we put more faith in these things than in the blessings and the mercy of the acharyas. We put more emphasis in finding solutions through these means than enchanting the holy names. And then we actually start to think that without the help of these various devices or facilities or these various forums of people who are expert in these fields, then we really, our life, our Krishna consciousness is not complete. Now we have seen this on so many occasions where devotees go to some counseling group or psychological group or psychiatric group or group which teaches self-assessment and developing your own inner confidence, or people go to various astrologers or Bhrigu readers, and they really feel this will help. We need this to actually serve Krishna better. And at the beginning, that may be their conception. But in almost every case, what I have seen personally is after some time, they lose faith in Krishna, they lose faith in Prabhupada, in the parampara, and they put more faith in these material sources. And these material sources are not teaching pure devotional service. So what was supposed to help us in our pure devotional service diverts us and deviates us from the path of pure devotional service. That happens to be how Maya works in this age of Kali. In the name of helping you in your Krishna consciousness, she's expert at just taking you away. Because they're subtleties. You know, what you associate with, you become very much influenced by that association. If you're associating with impersonalists or mayavadis or materialists, however pious they may be and however expert they may be in their fields, to the degree you put faith in them and what they're giving, to that degree their consciousness is going to influence you. And if we take shelter in those things, then we will lose the shelter of Krishna, undoubtedly. We can use these things if we're so fixed in our Krishna consciousness that we don't take shelter of them. Just use them like a tool. But the tendency of a neophyte devotee is to take shelter in sources outside of Krishna. And then we are disturbed. Maya uses these facilities to steal away our faith, bring us back on the path of materialism. Therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, and our great acharyas, they put the ultimate emphasis, there is no solution except Krishna consciousness. Accept what's favorable for devotional service, reject what's unfavorable for devotional service. We can utilize the things of this world. Srila Prabhupada explains that just like if you have a thorn in your foot, sometimes you take another thorn to take the first thorn out. But you have to be a little expert to do that. Because what happens in most cases is you end up with two thorns in your foot. And then you take a third one to take the other two out, and you end up with three thorns in your foot. And soon you have 108 thorns in your foot. And you die with all these thorns. You actually have to be expert to actually put into practice this idea of taking a thorn out with another thorn. We have to be somewhat mature. Srila Prabhupada was of that character. He was trying to teach us to be of that character. But he taught us how to do it. He said, you could use microphones, you could use cars, you can use airplanes, you could use so many things. But not those things that we take shelter of, just things we use. Not things that we are emotionally getting refuge in. And he also taught us that we should be very, very careful to chant our 16 rounds every day carefully. Prabhupada said in one purport, if any devotee is not attentively chanting 16 rounds every day, minimum, he will be a victim of Maya at any time. Very dangerous. Prabhupada taught us we have to read Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to come to classes whenever possible. If we're spiritually fixed in this type of association of devotees, then we can actually take some thorns to take the other thorn out of our foot. But otherwise, the other thorn gets stuck. And we have seen devotees who are weak in their sadhana, they use the facilities of cars and microphones and airplanes and nice buildings, and they end up becoming attached to those things and take shelter of those things and become proud. And then they lose their Krishna consciousness. They fall down. This microphone can be the cause of your fall down if you're not fixed in your sadhana. We have seen. It happens. It's happening. And we have to learn from the lessons around us. It's the lessons of the scripture. Dharamasya hyapavargyasya narototaya bhakalpate. Don't use the facilities you have in Krishna consciousness for your sense gratification. They're to be used in the mission of Guru and Gauranga. But you cannot do that unless you're strong. Unless you have very, very deep association with Krishna. In the beginning times, Prabhupada said, don't read other books because you'll become confused. You'll see apparent contradictions. You'll start taking shelter of other things and other ideas and other, and it will be diversion from your path. Now, if somebody was actually mature and fixed in their sadhana and fixed in Prabhupada's philosophy and fixed in faith in his mission, then yes, such a person can read Prabhupada's books to read other books to get certain data and information to help in his preaching. But what happens if you're not fixed like that? Prabhupada said, you will become confused. And you will cause confusion to others. And you will be diverted from your guru's mission. And we have seen people who become quite proud that now I'm mature. Now I'm very fixed and deep in my devotional service so I could read all other books. But what is the result? They compromise their faith in Prabhupada and Krishna. Therefore, they're confused. And their association confuses others. And create disunity. Create diversions. So what does that mean? That's exactly what Prabhupada was talking about. One of the most dangerous types of confusions is when you don't think you're confused. If you admit you're confused, then you say, okay, I shouldn't be doing this. But if you think I'm not confused, everyone else is confused except me. I'm mature. I'm advanced. I'm not confused. But what is the result? According to Srila Prabhupada, the result is how much are you surrendered to his mission and how much are you influencing others to surrender to the mission? Or how much are you just shopping around for this, that, and everything else? So Prabhupada wanted us to be very mature. And he didn't want us to take shelter of facilities or take shelter of the various offerings of this world unless we could really sincerely use it in serving his lotus feet. Because Srila Prabhupada is the person who has connected us with Krishna. He's given us the path back home, back to Godhead of spiritual perfection. He's asked us to serve, to assist the mission of that he has dedicated his life to his Guru Maharaj. This was his life and soul, his life's work. And Prabhupada knew that if we're willing to do that for him, Prabhupada and his Guru and all the Acharyas will bless us and bring us back home to Godhead. Real spiritual perfection comes by pleasing Guru and the Acharyas. It doesn't come by austerities or any intellectual accumulation of data, however profound that data may be. It comes by pleasing the previous acharyas. So Srila Prabhupada wanted, and he wanted it for our sake, and he wanted it for the sake of the world. So here we find that unless we actually have faith that Krishna consciousness is our only shelter, that Krishna consciousness is the only real solution, that Guru's grace is that, and blessings is the connection to that shelter, then we can easily be disturbed. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the greatest astrologer on the planet. And at a certain point, when he actually became, just before he became Acharya of his Gaudiya Math, he completely gave up astrology. Didn't even talk about it anymore. Because it's a valid science. But his conviction was so strong that so many valid sciences are there in this world. But to surrender to Krishna is the ultimate dharma. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masaja. And the tendency of your people is to become distracted by these karmakanda activities or the karmakanda processes. They can be used. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes use. But how did he use? He would take opinions, and if they were suitable to promoting Krishna consciousness, he would accept it. Otherwise, he would get a good laugh out of it. As Abhiram Prabhu explained to us once. Prabhupada was, when he was in his last, he was getting opinions of so many astrologers, and they were giving different opinions. And Prabhupada was going, he was asking, and if something could be used practically in Krishna's service, he would use it. But one day he said that they came with reports, and Prabhupada said, "Let's have a good laugh." So it is a valid science. But there's a danger. We start taking shelter. The astrologer becomes our guru. He becomes the messenger of God. We put faith there. And it diverts our faith away from Guru and Krishna. What does that mean? All right, he may be, if he's actually good, he may be able to tell you your karmic situation and certain things that you may adjust to better your karmic situation. But then you die in a karmic situation. Sarva dharman parityaja. If we actually want to attain the highest perfection, we have to learn to take shelter of Krishna. And in a very mature and proper way, we can use these things to take shelter of Krishna. But we have to be very, very careful. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, really, he didn't care about using these things anymore, although he was the best. Because he wanted to give exclusive faith in the mercy of Krishna. Exclusive faith in the holy names of Krishna. If by associating with these types of situations we're actually increasing the intensity in which we're chanting the holy names and seeking shelter of the Vaishnavas, then it may be all right. That's the test. Sri Krishna Sharanam Mam. Krishna's lotus feet are our only shelter. It is only his lotus feet that can save us from the repetition of birth and death. This material existence is like a vast ocean. And there's so many aquatic fish that want to devour us in this ocean. But for one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, the water, the whole ocean reduces to the size of the water contained within a small hoofprint of a calf. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining so nicely here that if there is Krishna consciousness, the world becomes Vaikuntha. It's the only solution. If it's a monarchy, if the leader is Krishna conscious, then the world will become Krishna conscious. If it's a democracy, then if the people are Krishna conscious, then they will elect a Dhruva Maharaj as the king, and then the world will become Krishna conscious. So whatever particular political party may be, the only solution is to somehow or other spread Krishna consciousness and induce people to take shelter of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And And such a Krishna conscious leader as Uttanapada, such a great soul, such a humble servant, simply living for the welfare of others, simply taking this position as a service to God and to humanity. Empowering his ministers, empowering the Brahmins to such an extent that he won't make a decision without consulting them and genuinely hearing their advices. Now, for a person with great ego, he wants people to think that this is my decision. This is my idea. But Uttanapada wasn't like that. This is another snare of Maya, even if you're Krishna conscious, to try to take credit for things. Is prakrite kriyamanani gunai karamani sarvasha ahankara vibhutatma karataham iti manyate. It's just the false ego under the influence of the three modes that we want to take credit for what we do. We want to think that I am the doer. I have made this decision. I have created this. This is my idea. Of course, if it doesn't go right, then you blame it on others. But if it goes right, then it's your idea. But Uttanapada didn't want to fall into that trap. Therefore, it was a joint effort. Although he was ultimately responsible, he didn't take credit. He was humble. He wasn't infatuated by power. Sometimes people become so infatuated by power and being worshipped, they actually get into a consciousness where anything I think is right. Anything I say is truth. Anything I do is the will of God. And people with high positions fall into that condition. He is the highest position, emperor of the world. But yet Maharaj Uttanapada is seeking the guidance, the counsel, and the blessings of his ministers and the Brahmins. As the king, it's his duty to execute the joint decisions. He may have had an idea. It was his idea that Dhruva Maharaj should be king at this time. But he wanted to share that decision with others. And when all the ministers and the Brahmins gave their support, then he actually went to the citizens, to the people who were subordinate to him. Because he wanted to see, you know, what is their feelings? This is an important consideration also. He wasn't out of touch. You have heard the saying that sometimes leaders are living in ivory towers. Do you know where that word comes from? At Oxford University, the most prestigious university in the world. I have seen recently there is a place called the Ivory Tower. And the Ivory Tower is a particular building in the Oxford complex where scholars from various parts of the world go into total seclusion to do research work. There's a big gate in front of it. It's a place of seclusion. It's a place where they completely escape from society and totally immerse themselves in research, scholastic research. So they cut themselves off from the rest of the world to do their intensive study.
So that's called the ivory tower, because the building is painted in an ivory type of color. Or somehow the stone is ivory color. But what that has been, the way it has been applied to the world, is when leaders are not in touch with the people that they're leading. They're just completely in their own world. They have their ideas, they have their conceptions, they have their opinions, but they don't understand. You know, how are the people seeing it? How is the people seeing you as the leader? What is the people's feelings, and how are they reacting to the decisions that are being made? When we have big positions, sometimes we lose touch. And oftentimes, it creates revolution. What was that in France? What was that lady's name? Marie Antoinette? What was this famous story when the citizens were starving? Huh? What was the question asked to her? Yes, like that. She was enjoying such opulences, ruling the kingdom with her husband. And people and the citizens were starving to death. They were totally frustrated. They hated the king and queen because they were doing nothing for them. But she was so out of touch. Somebody came to her and said, you know, the citizens are hungry. They don't have bread. He said, well, give them cake. She had no she was out of touch. Living in an ivory tower, as they say. And ultimately what happened? They didn't just have cake. They cut off her head and took that. Because it was intolerable. Well, sometimes due to our false ego, thinking that we're such great leaders, we actually lose touch with the people we're leading. And that defeats the whole purpose. Our constitutional position is to be the servant of the servant of the servant. Whatever position we have is simply to serve. King is representative of God. He's just to serve the citizens. Ramchandra wasn't like that at all. He would send spies out to hear exactly what the citizens were thinking, what they were feeling, what they were willing. He would himself disguise himself to go out and make sure he knows exactly what his citizens are feeling like. And there was that low-class washerman who chastised his wife because he considered her to be unchaste. He said, you think I'm going to be like this Ram and take you back? Unchaste woman? So Ram, how much did he love Sita? That was proven. When Sita was taken away by Ravana, he didn't just say, well, what can I do? It's the will of providence. He was searching through the Dandakaranya forest, weeping and crying, looking for his consort. He traveled all the way down to the southernmost parts of India searching for her. And ultimately, when he found out she was in Sri Lanka with Ravana, he declared a world war. Such a war with the entire Rakshasa dynasty. That was what kind of a protective, faithful husband he was. Sometimes husbands want their wives to be like Sita, but are they going to be like Ram? Haribo. But as a servant, when he was king, when he heard that his having Sita was by the opinion of the was creating doubt and confusion in his integrity, he banished Sita to Valmiki Muni's ashram for the rest of her life. He was not out of touch.
He was 24 hours a day in touch with the citizens. What are their needs? What are their thoughts? And how could I best serve them? That is a leader. Servant leader. Not master leader.
King Prataparuja, he would sweep the streets in front of Jagannath.
Not only because it was the ecstasy of his devotion, but also it was a statement to the world that I'm your king and I'm the humble servant of the servant. This is everyone's position.
Srila Prabhupada, he served his disciples with his life and soul. He, as Tejas Prabhu yesterday was saying, he was even servant of an insignificant insect.
While tens and thousands of people are begging for his association, chanting his glories, he sees a little insect, tiny little insect, and feeds that little insect with a leaf, knowing that the insect was hungry, with tears in his eyes. Of course, he was feeding that insect prasad from his hand. Merciful. So real leadership means servant. And real servant must understand and know the needs of those who are being served. This was Uttanapada's position. Therefore, he is being glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam. So he has consulted the ministers. He has taken the opinion and considered carefully that opinion of the public. And then he personally examined Dhruva Maharaja's character. So all of these things together, the Brahmins, the ministers, the public, and his own evaluation. And when all of these things were in harmony, then he was confident that Dhruva Maharaj is a proper servant. He will lead the world back home, back to Godhead. And then he left for the forest. And to the degree the world has leaders like this who are sincerely concerned with the welfare of the citizens, who are considered truly servant of the servant, to that degree the world will prosper. Spiritually and on every level. A classic example from the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is Ranti Dev. Yesterday, Tejas Prabhu brought up the name of King Ranti Dev. What kind of a personality was he? He was king. But he was such a servant. He was only concerned with the welfare of his citizens. He was willing to die for them. He never endeavored for anything for himself. He would simply serve. One time he performed a fast for 48 days to purify himself so that he could best serve the citizens. Actually, this is an important point. If we actually feel concern for other people's lives, our first concern has to be that we purify ourselves so we can actually do something for them. If you're a mother or a father and you love your children, then you better chant your rounds attentively. You better take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, what are you going to give to them? A drowning person cannot save another drowning person. To the degree you have Krishna consciousness, to that degree you can give Krishna consciousness to another. So for a preacher, Our goal to become Krishna conscious is not just to go back to Godhead. Our goal of becoming Krishna conscious is so that we can actually be empowered instruments to enlighten other people in Krishna consciousness. Even our own sadhana is for the welfare of others. That is selfless. So whatever responsibilities you may have with subordinates, to the degree you take shelter of Krishna, to that degree you can give shelter to another. A devotee simply wants to be an instrument in the hands of the great souls. But we have to surrender to the great souls in order to be an instrument. Then we can do something wonderful. Then we can actually... What is our love? We don't even know what love is. Krishna is the source of all love. Love and truth is simply to share Krishna's love. In this material world, it's I love you, oh, I love you. Then you get married. And then a little while later, you're in divorce courts and you have a different song you're singing. 71% of marriages in America are a divorce in 3 years. So they're all looking in each other's eyes. I love you. Then a few years later, they're looking at each other's eyes in the divorce court, saying, I hate you. Hare Krishna, look what you've done to me. Look what you've done to me. No, it's your fault. No, it's your fault. You can't even settle it. You have to have lawyers and judges try to settle it for you. That's what love may lead to in this world. What is real love? Krishna is the supreme source of all love. To the degree we become purified, Krishna can love through us. Krishna's love can manifest through us, through our hearts, through our words, through our actions, through our thoughts. That is real love. Just to connect to Krishna's love and to share that love with others. That's the ultimate ecstasy. But that can come only to the degree that our heart is genuinely purified of false ego and selfish desires, material misconceptions. So if we really want to show love to someone, we have to surrender to Krishna. We have to really take shelter of the holy name. We have to take shelter of the Vaishnavas. We have to take shelter of the Bhagavat. We have to take shelter of devotional service, of the deity, of Radha Gopinath. These 9 poses of devotional service, we must learn to take shelter of them, to become purified. Then we can actually do something real for others. So Ranti Dev, he performed 48 days of fasting to purify himself so that he could better serve his citizens. He was a pure devotee. And after fasting, somebody came and brought some nice prasad and some water. And not only did his fast, his whole family fasted with him. That's how influential he was. It doesn't specifically say, but it appears that he didn't force his family to fast with him. They wanted to fast with him. They loved their father, their husband. They were behind him. He was compassionate. He loved them. They reciprocate. They love him. They wanted to assist him. The whole family fasted. And they were all on the verge of death when this prasad came. So he arranged the prasad to be offered to himself and all his family members. And at that moment, a Brahmin happened to come in. The Brahmin said, I'm very hungry, O king. Please give me some prasad. So immediately, without even thinking of himself, he just served the Brahmin as much prasad as that Brahmin could eat. Then whatever was left, he was about to share with his family when a Shudra came into the house. Shudra came into the house and said, "Oh, King, I'm very hungry." So King Ranti Dev, he divided the prasad with his family members, and then he gave the Shudra to his full satisfaction. Then whatever little was left, he was about to eat, and some person came with a pack of dogs and said, "Oh, King, I'm hungry, and my dogs are hungry too." So every morsel of food that was left, he fed to the dogs. Now he was trembling, just on the verge of leaving his body due to starvation. And he was about to drink that water to save his life. And at that moment, a chandala came to his door and said, "Oh, King, I'm thirsty. Do you have water?" Ranti Dev knew, if I give that water to this chandala, I die. He became ecstatic with the thought. He folded his palms and offered his prayers to the Supreme Lord. He prayed, "O Supreme Personality of Godhead, I do not desire from you the eight mystic perfections. I do not desire from you liberation from the sufferings of birth and death. My only desire is that I may always live amongst the living entities who are suffering in this world. My only desire is that I may suffer on their behalf so they never have to suffer again." In giving this water to this chandala, I have become free from hunger, from thirst, from lamentation, from fear, and from all anxieties. Then he gave the water to the chandala, which symbolizes giving his life for the welfare of the lowest outcast of society. At that time, demigods like Brahma and Shiva appeared and informed the king that actually all these personalities that came begging were demigods in disguise. They wanted to test the king and show the world the glories of a Vaishnava. Such a selfless, humble servant. They offered him any benediction he wanted. He rejected any benediction from the demigods. When they asked him for benedictions, he just fixed his lotus feet on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and didn't want anything else. He already expressed his prayer to the Lord. The only benediction he wanted is to live amongst the suffering souls and to suffer on their behalf so that they can become free from suffering. Shukadev Goswami describes that because Ranti Dev was ruling the entire world was Krishna conscious. All of his citizens, according to the Bhagavatam, were pure devotees. Because that's the person they're looking up to. That's their standard. That's their leader. A person who's such a humble servant, he's willing to die in the service of the most insignificant people, even the dogs. When they see that quality in Ranti Dev, they all surrender to Krishna. They felt such love, such protection, such compassion coming from him. They just want to assist him. When there's a good king, the citizens can't wait to pay their taxes. They'll give extra. They don't have accountants figuring out different methods of reducing their taxes. Because they want to help the king out of love, because they feel loved. They love.
actually, if you have this psychological dilemma that I don't feel loved by anyone, then try loving, try being loving to others and see how they respond. The loneliest people are the people who don't know how to express their affection and their concern and their love for others. People reciprocate. Ranti Dev was a pure Vaishnav. He was not concerned with his own psychological or physical condition. He was concerned with the welfare of others. And therefore everyone loved him. It is explained by Srinivasacharya, the six Goswamis were very dear to the gentle as well as the ruffians. Dhira, dhira. How is that? Because they had such love and compassion for the soul in everyone. They had such respect for every living entity. They would melt people's hearts. In giving we receive. That is Krishna consciousness. Don't be seeking that people give you all of these things. Be understanding, you'll be understood. Give love, you'll receive love. And what does it mean to give love? This is revealed by Ranti Dev. To be the servant of the servant of the servant. Actually, not for prestige, but for service. No duplicity. This is Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada explained in so many ways the purpose of this Krishna consciousness to society is to create these type of leaders. And he expected every one of his followers on one level or another to be this type of leader. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, we have Kolavecha Sridhar. Simple seller of banana leaves and banana cups and banana bark, and banana roots, bananas. Very simple, poverty stricken. His clothes were ripped in holes in so many places. His house was just a thatched hut with holes in the roof. Very simple person. But he had taken shelter of the holy name. He was actually a selfless servant of every living being. And today, 500 years later, we are being inspired by this Kolavecha Sridhar. Socially, he was a very poor and simple person. But yet he's like a guru to all of us 500 years later. He was a leader. He wasn't King Pataparudra, was another type of leader. But even if you're in the simplest, humblest position socially, by your example, you can be a leader. And you can transform the hearts of the world. And that comes by following in the footsteps of these great souls that we are reading about in this beautiful story of Srimad Bhagavatam. Jananivas Prabhu, would you like to add anything? Tejas Prabhu, would you like to share your sublime realizations with us? Navayogana Prabhu. Is there any questions? Wait 1 second. I'll be right back. I will not disclose why I'm going, but I'll be right back.
Maharaj, in the material world, If you want to share your love with someone, you want to love someone, but there's the fear of being exploited, because in the material world, everybody is not Krishna conscious.
Mm.
So, and we spend most of our time in the material world.
Mm.
So, how do we begin this process of loving others?
By loving Krishna. Krishna will not exploit you. We want to love Krishna. And we want to share that love with the world. And if someone exploits your love for Krishna, that's very good. They will benefit. Bhante Dev could have thought he was exploited. But to give our life for Krishna, for the welfare of others, is wonderful. So material affection can be exploited, which could be used and it can cause us great miseries. But real love, the love of Krishna, to be an instrument of Krishna's compassion, even if someone tries to exploit us, what is the harm? We pray for them. Yes?
Maharaj, you explained so beautifully that how dhira dhira jana priya karo means a pure devotee is dear to everyone, gentle and ruffians. Sometimes we see that great Mahatmas like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, who were concerned about the welfare of all people, and they were honestly trying to preach the message. Sometimes they were opposed and people were trying to, you know, kill them also, and the same with Jesus Christ also. So how we can understand this?
Prahlad Maharaj was a perfect Vaishnav who loved his father with such pure ecstatic emotion, but yet his father wanted to kill him. He hated his son. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, similarly, people tried to kill him on so many occasions. He was actually very dear to their souls. But Prabhupada explains that if you become successful in spreading Krishna consciousness, then inevitably in this world of envy, the more you're successful, the more you'll have enemies. Prabhupada explained that. Because you are going against the whole current of the society. But actually, you are the most dear to the heart, to the soul of even your enemies. So the six Goswamis, even ruffians who had some innocence, their hearts would melt. But people who are crooked and duplicitous, Chanakya Pandit said that the two most dangerous creatures is the snake and an envious human being. But of the two, a snake can be charmed with mantras, but an envious human being cannot be changed by any means. So Prahlad compared his father to a snake and a scorpion. He said to Narsingadev that saintly people like to see them killed because they cause problems to others. He's talking about his father. He loved his father. But his father was so envious he could not tolerate. Even Nityananda Prabhu, he had enemies. People hated him because he was so successful in transforming so many people to become devotees. Even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srivas Thakur, people were blaspheming them. So actually, they were very, very dear to the soul within the heart of every living being, because they're very dear to Krishna. And to so many ruffians and so many demons, they melted their hearts and they became devotees. So they were dear to gentle and ruffians, but it doesn't say they were dear to everyone on a physical level. Krishna says in Gita, for one who is my devotee, he is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. And it is described, that means he's talking about the souls. He's talking about the souls of all living beings. However, on this worldly level, if you are successful in anything, what to speak of Krishna consciousness, if you're successful in anything, you make enemies. If you really want to be popular, not popular, but if you really don't want to have enemies, fail at everything you do. And nobody will be envious of you. You won't have any enemies. If you're successful in any level, immediately people will be envious. That's the way the world is. It's a world of envy. Jesus Christ was simply praying for the people who were crucifying him. God forgive them. But while he was praying like that, they were spitting on him and blaspheming him. So he had no enemies on the divine platform. But on the platform of this world, yes, he was successful. If he wasn't successful, they wouldn't have done anything to him. If he just had a few brahmacharis in an ashram somewhere in a cave in Galilee, nobody would have done anything. But thousands of people were joining him. So it was a very difficult situation. So therefore, a devotee is forgiving and kind and loving to everyone, even his enemies. Does that answer your question? Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes some people might say that we have a very hard heart when we trying to maintain the purity of the philosophy, because we are like in a spiritual mood with connect with some other spiritual movements, for example, and sometimes we are in contact with like New Age things and other different. So I see myself a little some other places when these things are like devotees are using some of these other things also. So my question is how we can maintain the purity of the philosophy without be like hard, like strict, or I don't know.
Like. You must be strict. Harival. You must be strict. Disciple means discipline. We must strictly follow the regulations. We must strictly follow the principles. However, if we are performing our strict sadhana in a proper way, in a proper service attitude, with proper humility, it will make our hearts soft. If we don't have that service attitude, if we don't strive for that humility, then our
austerities will make us hard-hearted. So when we are in association with people who are Mayavadis, because most, what you are saying, New Age, most New Age ideology is a very modernized, pseudo type of Mayavad conception. Of course, real Mayavadis, they're sannyasis, they renounce everything of the world. But as Kali Yuga progresses, then Mayavad becomes the philosophy that justifies sense gratification unrestrictedly. So we must be very strict to protect ourselves from that influence, but not in a hard-hearted way. We can be strict with soft heart. That means we don't hate them. You may hate the disease, but you should not hate the diseased. You should feel compassion for them. You should, whatever you can, you should either pray or endeavor to enlighten them, to bring them to the platform of true bhakti. And if you're not able to do that, you pray for them. You must be strict to protect yourself and protect others from that influence, but at the same time, it should be done in a spirit of service, of compassion. The element that makes the heart hardest is false pride. That's why sometimes people who have very good sadhana, or sometimes people perform very, very severe austerities, and they become proud. And that pride makes their heart hard. Humility and servitorship makes the heart soft. As we're chanting the holy names, as we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and we should be praying and striving to become more humble. Servant of the servant. Then our heart will melt. Sneha means the heart completely melts. That's the perfection of bhakti. So as preachers, Prabhupada would be very, very strong like a thunderbolt in annihilating misconceptions. But he was also soft like rose. The thunderbolt was just a weapon to protect his disciples and to try to illuminate those in darkness. But the person who was wielding the thunderbolt was the most soft-hearted, forgiving, compassionate soul. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Now sometimes being part of the congregation, we are faced with many complex problems, especially in devotees' marriages. And as counselors, we have to deal with them. And there are discussions among the counselors that whether it is really required for us to go to some professional marriage counseling and take some professional training so that we can Krishnaize that and apply it in our own dealings with the devotees. So my question is whether such a training for the counselors is required, where they go to some professional marriage counselors and get trained and Krishnaize, or whether whatever training we are receiving through Srimad Bhagavatam and our acharyas, is that enough?
Certainly Srimad Bhagavatam is enough, but the question is whether the recipients are in a spiritually receptive enough state of mind to receive it. So sometimes people become very much inflicted by the modes of nature. They have these controversies and quarrels. In that case, really, really sincere. Bhagavatam says, perform the austerity, unite, harmonize, to keep Krishna in the center, sacred Guru and Krishna, and we'll go back to God. Yes, but they don't, they're still fighting. That means their Srimad Bhagavatam is, they're not listening. They're not ready to hear it. Therefore, as an act of compassion, sometimes we have to come down to their level to help them. So marriage counseling and all of these courses, if it's genuinely being utilized to help people in their devotional service, if it's genuinely used as a communication skill to help people in this way, then it can be accepted. But we have to be very strong in our own sadhana. Otherwise, if we're not, we'll be carried away by these things. We'll be thinking that the course in marriage counseling is the solution to the problems of marriage. It's not. Krishna consciousness is the only solution. Again, it's a thorn to take another thorn out. So we have to be strong ourselves so that we don't end up with thorns in our own foot in the process of taking them out somebody else's. So yes, under certain circumstances, these things could be very useful. But really, it's useful not to solve the problem. It's the useful for certain communication skills so that you can inject Krishna consciousness in a particular setting where it will solve the problem. Because the problems of marriages are about as mundane as anything in this world. That's my theoretical observation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was married at a very, very young age by the order of his father. So young. Didn't even know who his wife was. They just had the ceremony. They were both little, this big when they got married. And then he just went to live with his guru. And his wife, who was she grew up years later in the family. She was still at home with her parents. And they were going to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's guru saying, you know, you have to send him home. You know, our daughter's a widow because of him. So the guru said, you should go home and spend time with your wife. So he happened to, what is that story? He happened to go home and spent a night with her. And the whole night he was just preaching Srimad Bhagavatam. And she became enlightened. She gave him blessings. Go back to your guru, friend. So that's the real solution to these marriage problems. How many husbands and wives do like that? Some do it, but they're not the ones with problems. But the problems are based on such mundane matters that, you know, I would say that if Bhagavad Katha is not doing its work, then marriage counseling might be a necessity just so that you're stable enough to actually listen to Bhagavad Katha. But that's the solution. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Any of our Tejas Prabhu or Navayovan of your experienced Grihasthas, would you like to speak on this subject? They are more in. This is the sign that they have realization. They don't even want to touch the subject. A because I'm such an unrealized neophyte theoretical person. I'm so foolish. I've wandered into this subject. One more question. Oh, Radha Gopinath Prabhu.
Maharaj, after hearing about Uttanapa today, my concept of him has changed. Because all this, you know, how do we accommodate that he was such a Rajarshi, caring for every living entity and their opinion of the public, but at the same time, completely neglected his senior wife because of his attachment to his younger wife.
This is exactly what we were just discussing. Obviously, he was a great soul, and he, due to infatuation and attachment to his younger wife, he committed an aparad to Dhruva. And he suffered miserably. Because he's a devotee, Krishna saw. There was some defect in him, and Krishna, as we say in ISKCON, Krishna smashed him. He went through so much suffering as a reaction, but he learned his lesson. He learned his lesson by that reaction. And he honored Dhruva Maharaj and honored his mother and became very perfect. So in the case of Uttanapada, there was defect at the beginning, but he was a devotee. But he learned his lessons. And by the time he left home with Dhruva and put Dhruva Maharaj as king, he had evolved to a much higher platform of pure devotion. So similarly, we're devotees. Not all Raj Rishis are pure, unalloyed devotees. Some Raj Rishis are just upholders of Dharma. They may not be, you know, Rasika Bhaktas. So he was a saintly king in that he was upholding Dharma. But obviously in the beginning he was influenced by the modes of material nature. But because Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, he got the benefit. He got great benefit. When Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, he and even Saruchi, his envious stepmother, became great souls because of Dhruva Maharaj's devotional service. They all became purified. And when Dhruva Maharaj came home, even Saruchi was so proud of him. Even she wanted him to be king. So there was a great transformation that took place among his family due to his devotion. Does that answer your question? So we have to understand the difference between Uttanapada and Saruchi before and after Dhruva Maharaj's darshan of the Lord. That's a very integral, essential part of the beauty of this story. How Dhruva Maharaj's love for God, for Narayan, not only transformed his life, but transformed so many people's lives. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.